Since 2006, my colleague Daniel Blazek has been an archivist and library technician at the Library of Congress Recorded Sound Section. A 2004 graduate of the L. Jeffrey Selznick School of Film Preservation at George Eastman House, his tastes run toward comedy and documentary spoken word. In the past few years, he has attended over 150 comedy shows in the D.C. metro area, collecting hard-to-find stand-up recordings along the way, which are invaluable to us. From 1993 to 2002, he served as the head of the Government Information and Special Formats Division at the Otto G. Richter Library, University of Miami, Florida. And title of Dan's presentation, I think it's up there, When the Cat's Away, Woody and Groucho in the Tonight Show Seat, July 1964. Please welcome Dan Blazek.
It's great to be here among so many new and old friends. I have a poor memory, but I recognize your face. I have no memory of names. That's why I do PowerPoint, actually, so I can write things down and read them. But I'm glad to be here, and if you want some totally honest feedback about your presentation, do it for your colleagues at lunchtime and go over. Because this is actually the seventh iteration of this PowerPoint, and successively I've had to get it down, which is actually hard because you're giving away the stuff that you think is vital and you've been working on. And I've actually been working on this for about a year. I didn't do the original cataloging. The catalogers did that for the discs, but they neglected at the time to put in the guests who are on the shows for the 1964 Tonight shows. So listening through these, I think, well, that's an important thing. We're going to put the guests in. And that's what I did. So not to brag, but I'm happy about this. I don't have to do this again. And it's a good thing. We have some 65s that are not yet cataloged, but that's another year. So I'm going to take the summer off. I appreciate this hotel. Does everyone have an ATM in their bathroom, just like I do, or is that extra? All right. Okay, my one attempt at amateur humor. This is what it actually sounds like.
Yes. Last night, a lady left the studio disappointed because she said all she really wanted was to see me wiggle my cigar. Women are certainly a lot easier to please than they used to be.
Okay, that was Groucho to start us off on the right foot. And I got the feeling that as I was listening to feedback about the show, the presentation today, that there might be slightly more Groucho fans than Woody fans here. Is there one way or the other? Do I hear Groucho? Woody? Oh, I might be wrong. Okay. Close, okay. All right, both. Yeah, that's what I thought, too. Okay, let's move right along. I'm going to try to stick to the schedule as much as I can, but I did put in some contingencies to put in extra if there was interest and we had time, but I'm not guaranteeing that. Anyway, I'm going to kind of take the tack that I want to play you as much information as I can, because unless you make it to Library of Congress, these are not easy to find. And I honestly don't know who has these, other than perhaps Carson Enterprises. But maybe people do. I don't know. First of all, Woody and Groucho were filling in for Johnny's first Las Vegas booking in 1964. He had not done stand-up comedy at a big showcase like the Sahara Hotel, and he was brought there by a man named Stan Irwin, who later brought the Beatles to Las Vegas as well the next month. And Stan was quite a wheeler and dealer. He was also kind of a massage therapist and kind of guru, too, for Liza Minnelli and other people, but that's yet another story. January Jones opened for, she was a singer, opened for Johnny there. You can see the picture of Johnny in this pamphlet from the Saharan. Even though Johnny was, his ratings actually surpassed Jack Parr's within about 6 months of his start in October 62, he was still only making about $100,000 a year. And by going to the Sahara, he could basically double his salary easily and also double his clout. But for an entertainer, if you wanted some, do you not agree, George? You're frowning.
I feel bad for somebody in 1962 making $100,000.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I shouldn't be so sensitive with people's expressions. But anyway, moving right along, he was gone from July 6th to August 6th. He returned August 6th, Johnny did. And Woody Allen was the first guest host that week, followed by Ed McMahon and Skitch Henderson. Ed McMahon was the sidekick, of course, of Johnny. Skitch Henderson was the first musical director before Doc Severinsen. Pat Boone was the third host, and Phil Grice had asked me why I didn't use Pat Boone, and I felt like, well, I don't think Pat's as funny as Woody and Groucho, but that's just me. But if actually I had more time, Phil, I would do a two-hour documentary on this, actually, because there was a whole lot going on here. This was the Freedom Summer. There was the Mississippi Three were still missing. The Civil Rights Act had just been signed July 2nd, and there was a lot of change in the air. Alan Sherman, Steve Lawrence, and Edie Gourmet, and Ed and Skitch again filled out August 3rd through 5th. I will say, for better or for worse, Bill Cosby was a much sought-after guest during this month. In fact, he was on the show four times between July 7th and August 7th, and all four of these hosts hosted him. In fact, when Johnny hosted him on August 7th, that was the one-year anniversary of him being on The Tonight Show. In fact, Alan Sherman brought him on The Tonight Show August 7th, 1963, about 5 months before Woody actually made it to The Tonight Show. And talk about some racism. Woody made it earlier to be a guest host. But I'm going to leave it there. As you guys know, this is the history of our country. The first African-American man to host The Tonight Show was actually in November of 64 on the one-year anniversary of JFK's assassination. Sammy Davis Jr. interviewed Robert Kennedy, and Phil Grice has that recording as well, although we do not yet. So Woody, important time for him. His first album was coming out. He had spent about 3 years transitioning from being a writer for comedians to being a stand-up. And it wasn't easy for him. He was quite shy, and he sometimes had to put his back to the audience. But he found his niche, and he found a real a talent in delivering his lines very well. So what I'm going to play for you is some things you can't hear elsewhere. He only had 3 comedy albums before he said, I'm just going to be the auteur of comedy in the United States and write and direct 50 films. So these are 2 jokes that you can't hear on his 3 albums. And also there's a very well-known joke that's also going to illustrate a point later. And then there's some of him playing an instrument. So some unique stuff here.
My grandfather was partners with a Scotsman, a really sick man named McTavers, who used to go home at night. And when nobody was looking, he would dress up in pants. And they had, this is a true story, they got possession of a very fast cow. This is a true story. I did the mile in 216. 214 milked is what it was. This is an antique heirloom watch that I am very proud of. My grandfather, on his deathbed, sold me this watch.
That's the well-known one.
Can I play it?
Sure.
It's my one song.
Identify this song? Tell me later, but I'm writing an article on this, so it'll be much more detailed. Woody's most important, it was interesting not to hear the clarinet that he was playing the piano there, Woody's most important guests, I would say, comedically during that week were Edie Adams, Alan Sherman, and Bill Cosby. Edie Adams, he had not met before, but she was kind of comedy royalty, of course, because she was married to Ernie Kovacs. Kovacs had died in 62 in a car wreck, left her with a lot of debts. So she immediately, instead of just grieving, she had to work a lot. So she was in movies and films and supporting three daughters, I believe, at the time. So she was a sympathetic character for all of Hollywood. Alan Sherman, also a big time for him. In a couple weeks, he would be performing with the Boston Pops and Arthur Fiedler and putting out the Peter and the Commissar album. And he would appear a couple times on The Tonight Show during this month as well. And he had a good interview with Pat Boone, actually, which is interesting. He talks about trombones and buying toilet plungers for the mutes and things like that. But here I'm going to play a song that you can't hear elsewhere that he had written the day before. Also, Bill Cosby was a friend of Woody Allen, and they did hang out together in Greenwich Village, and they walked between clubs and between the Bitter End and the Village Vanguard and things like that, and they would discuss their sets and things. But this runs about 2 minutes a medley of the three, just to save time. Give you an idea of what's going on here.
The last picture that I saw you in was Mad, Mad, Mad World, which I would imagine anyone would be exhausted after.
Oh, that was fun. The lunches were particularly great. Milton Berle with a tongue sandwich, only he had the tongue where his tongue should be hanging out, and people with cake in their ears and beefsteak through their glasses. Mickey Rooney, I looked at him one day, and he had the glass out of his glasses, and he had a big piece of roast beef through it.
Sounds like a meeting of my cousin's club. You wrote this last night.
I just started to write it. A friend of mine, Art Buchwald, wrote a column about this. She wore a bathing suit without a top because she found it was not against the law there. And then some angry person called a cop. When he arrived, he enjoyed what he saw there. She wore a bathing suit without a top while lying down on the sand for her siesta. They told the cop that he should make her stop. And he said, when I finish looking, I'll arrest her.
When I was first performing, I was working at a place called the Bitter End in Greenwich Village. And there was a friend of mine that used to come backstage all the time and hang out with me. The kid wanted to be a comic. He's sweet. He's a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine. We used to commiserate backstage all the time together. And in addition to being a very funny comedian, a very fine athlete. And he used to come back when we had three shows a night to do. And he used to take it like baseball batting averages. He used to come back and tell me, well, 2 for 3 tonight, or 1 for 3. And I used to say, well, I struck out 3 times. You know, it's really a warm relationship. And I wanted him to be on the show tonight because I think he's hilarious and up and coming, really. His name is Bill Cosby, so be gentle with him. How are you?
Well, Haywood, you've made the big time. What are you going to do after this?
Oh, he's asking me questions.
Yes. Why not?
It's
have a cigarette.
It's a pleasure to be on your show, Bill. I don't smoke. I'm going to show you what clean living and no women can do. Let me ask you a question, Cosby.
Ask me.
My parents are enormously proud of me. Enormously. They think I'm Sammy Davis Jr. Your folks are from Philadelphia.
Yes, and strangely enough, they think you're Sammy Davis Jr. too.
Yes, they enjoyed quite a warm relationship, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. But another interesting thing about Woody's guest hosting is that he brought a flavor of Greenwich Village to the show as well. He had some clout enough to bring his friends in, and a number of them were probably not ready for tonight's show, but since Johnny wasn't there, you get to hear people like Judy Henske, Renee Taylor, Jackie Clark, and Len Maxwell. If you're too far, oh boy, 5 minutes, okay. I better jump into this, because we haven't even gotten to Groucho yet. But, okay, let's
She's
go ahead.
She's a friend of mine, and a funny lady, and a great singer, Miss Judy Henske.
Had an amateur night there, and all the convicts were the performers, and the head con, sort of the head of the student body there, was the MC, and he opened the show with these words. Good evening, fellow menaces to society, warden and screws. Tonight, instead of the usual movie here at Sing Sing, a bunch of the boys and myself got together, and we're gonna put on the annual prison vaudeville show, which will be followed immediately by the annual prison riot.
I used to go out with a girl who worked in the nightclub. She was a beautiful girl. Mm-hmm. She had lovely long red hair. She was a redhead.
I think you're safe in saying that.
But being a Catholic girl, she always wore a cross. And when she came to my house, my mother would say, when she comes to the house, why doesn't she wear the Star of David? I said, because she's not Jewish. That's why. One night, the girl called me on the phone, and my mother answered the phone. The girl said, hello, this is Kathy. Can I please speak to Jackie? My mother said, hold the wire. Jackie, the Red Cross is on the phone.
She's an amazing authority on, well, SEX, on human relations. She really is a...
Oh, that's sweet of you to notice. No, I'm not really an authority on men. But a lot of married men say that, you know, that they have troubles with their wives and that their wives are frigid, which leads me to believe that maybe the best way to get a husband is to be frigid.
You're talking to the wrong person about that, Renee. The height of my experience consists of selling hip boots in a women's shoe store.
Okay, I'm gonna have to book now. These, of course, did not make it to us in their entirety. The video was erased, and I think most of you kind of know that from the 1960s, the Tonight Shows were reused for different shows, but they come to us from the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service as an audio format only. Hour and 45 minutes were reduced down to about 25 minutes per side. These are some of the lost guests of Woody, and Louise Lasser, Count Basie, and Tom Poston would have been lost if it were not for the gentleman in the front row, Phil Grice. I purchased his tape here. It's very interesting. He recorded everything from July 10th, 1964, Tonight Show, pretty much off the TV, right? All right. And. I don't really have time to play this, but I wish I did. I'm going to move on here. Groucho and others were very big supporters of Woody, and when Groucho made it to his guest hosting, he was very complimentary of Woody, but I'm going to have to jump in and play.
You realize that it's almost 2 years ago on this very spot that I launched a very nervous young man on his first night of The Tonight Show? And that today, 2 years later, you can buy garter belts for 29 cents a pair. It's not supposed to get a laugh, but it baffles the censor. Ed, you know, I've been watching The Tonight Show for some time, and you in particular. And I thought maybe tonight you wouldn't mind if I asked you a few questions about yourself.
Anything at all, Groucho? Go ahead.
Anything?
Well, anything you want.
First of all, what do you do for a living? You probably wonder why I carry a watch like this, an old-fashioned...
I was going to ask you.
Yeah. But you didn't, Ed.
I was waiting for the applause for your appearance to die down. There was a lot of applause.
It didn't take long, Ed. But this is has a sentimental value for me. The attachment of this watch is... That's why I wear it instead of a wristwatch. My grandfather sold it to me on his deathbed. That's why I like it.
I say, it's funny you tell that story because Woody Allen told that joke while he was here the week he was hosting. Told the same story, yes.
I guess that's where I heard it.
When I grow too old to dream, why do you have to remind me? And please stop telling me I'm not the man that I used to be. I watched you last night as you crawled into bed. And, ladies and gentlemen, because of network restrictions, I'm unable to complete this song. However, if you'd send me 10 cents in stamps and Jane Mansfield, I'll prove to you that a man is never too old to dream.
Okay, wrapping up here. This is the last clip I'm going to play. Groucho did not have the clout to bring whoever he wanted on. He actually wanted his songwriter on. Who is his songwriter? It escapes me right now. But he did manage to get a number of the Borscht Belt comedians on. He did want specifically Bill Cosby and Phyllis Diller.
In each school in those days, they had a kind of an official executioner. If a kid was bad, they sent you to her, see? And there was a scene there. There's an execution. As soon as a kid walked in, she'd grab him and say, "Oh, you again." You know that? And then she'd twist his ear so that he'd become a Picasso. You know, his eye would move over slowly to the other side. And I remember this teacher shaking this kid and poking him. And then when she'd get through, she'd say, "Now, what do you have to say for yourself?" And he says, "Miss Wilson wants to borrow your scissors."
Oh, that brings me back to my other problem. You know, when my bra rides up, it has a very smooth ride. Well, I wish I could forget my first bra. I thought it was earmuffs.
The movie is fantastic. It starts off right away. George Peppard is the lead. Handsome fella.
Wonderful.
Man.
I want to tell you something. He's the most virile looking fella I've seen on the screen since Clark Gable was young.
Virile?
Yeah.
Yes. And angry,
wonderful.
Too.
Wonderful. Well, that's what makes virility.
Anger?
Yes.
Oh, no wonder. I didn't know that. I thought you were supposed
to
smile. Well, of
course.
I didn't know that at all.
You get angry if you have no virility. New York, yes.
Oh, well, that's New York. That's Manhattan. That's different than Brooklyn. We ain't recognized people in Manhattan for 112 years.
Well, are they going to have a treaty now or something?
No, we resent Manhattan very much. And,
the Manhattanites, you mean, huh? How about the daytime? You see, when you refer to somebody from Manhattan, you say a Manhattanite.
Hey, Grouch, you talk your way, let me talk my way.
I mean, tell us a little about yourself. Where are you from?
Philadelphia. And I listen to the radio, to the comedians and the comics that work the airways, the Bennies, the Groucho Marxes and Fred Allens and whatnot. And these were always my favorites, the comedians. Singers never made it with me. I'd turn the singer off, and I played along with all of the shows. I did the voices and the characters, you know, and I entertained the kids in the neighborhood.
All right, just summing up, Carson broke attendance records in Vegas his first time. It got him a lot more clout, a lot more time off in the future. He got Mondays off. He didn't have to do his 15 minutes extra from 11:15 to 11:30. And he would return there for 12 years, and after that to Caesar's Palace. Cosby and Groucho remained friends. Groucho and Woody remained friends. In fact, he hired Groucho's girlfriend, Erin Fleming, to be on Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex in a fairly sexy role, minor. Groucho didn't like that too much, but she was used to being in totally nude plays of the 60s, so it was not a big thing for her. Woody and Cosby, although they were close before they made it big, really, other than what I just learned from Phil today about them appearing together in the Grammys in 65, they really never have worked together, which is interesting to me. There's approximately 185 Tonight Shows available for listening from 1964, and they include all these various guests. And I want to thank Matt Barton, Catelyn Hunter, my fellow technicians, and Gene Deanna, Phil Grice, Sam Brolowski, and that's about it.
Thank you very much, Dan. We've run over, and I know a lot of people want to get to the ARSC business meeting, including myself, I'm afraid, but I'm sure Dan will be happy to answer any questions that you have up here.